Oh, hi there. This is M.P. Fitzgerald, author of A Happy Bureaucracy, and I'm pretending to play the jazz piano.
No one is holding a gun to my head to say this, but they are withholding the antidote. Funding for this podcast comes from ebook and paperback sales of A Happy Bureaucracy, the book. Send a warning to you straight-laced and prudish books on your bookcase by adding paperback copies of A Happy Bureaucracy, Fear and Loathing in the Wasteland, and post-apocalyptic pirates. Just head over to my website, mpfitzgerald.art. Once more, that's mpfitzgerald.art. Okay.
Just please spare my family. Please spare my family.
Fear and Loathing in the Wasteland. The Happy Bureaucracy, Book 2, by M.P. Fitzgerald, narrated by Gary Bennett. Author's note. Strewn between drug use, groin malice, and cursing on a level tantamount to sacrilege are even more gratuitous mentions of bureaucracy. These bureaucratic references may not be for the weak of heart. Also, child endangerment. Did I mention child endangerment? Chapter 7. The machine had begun to turn. The tax army was now in full motion. Arthur did not have long until the enforcers would march close enough to open fire, or be fired upon. Once Boyd had given the order, his personal assistant filled out a form on his clipboard and sprinted off toward the tents behind him. In a couple minutes, Boyd's order was announced over a newly erected loudspeaker at the front of the operations tents. The tax army obliged, and they marched forward. Boyd apparently had not noticed the pair of auditors looking up at him. His full attention was on what was on the other side of his binoculars, and his coffee. The assistant returned to Boyd's side. Arthur gathered up his courage, which was akin to scraping the bottom of a bowl after a meal. There was just not that much left. Where his courage failed him, his desperation would have to suffice. Arthur walked up to the base of the control van, right up to the shade of the umbrella.
Mr. Boyd, sir, we have to talk.
Arthur was not summoned. Arthur was not invited to the control van. What had just happened was an affront, an invasion of Boyd's space and authority. The binoculars came down slowly. And Henry S. Boyd turned his head to Arthur just as slow. His eyebrows came close together, almost merging, and a frown spread beneath his broom-like mustache.
What?
Boyd spat, a question that was just as much pointed at what Arthur had to say as it expressed Boyd's perplexity to the skipping of protocol. He did not, however, look surprised to see Arthur alive. Arthur had faced the colonel. He had stood up to the powerful and the cold before. But Boyd was not just his boss or his general. No, Boyd was the IRS, and that was far more frightening. Arthur placed his hands behind him. He looked up at Boyd, but did not make eye contact. He saw Ralph look on with wide eyes.
Sir, the slavers have barricaded their front walls with people,
Arthur shouted.
I saw. What is your point?
We do not have an appointment, Boyd said.
They are in danger of our crossfire.
You are reaching the end of my patience, my boy. What is your point? Only a psychopath would need more than what Arthur just said. A psychopath or a bureaucracy. Empathy had failed. So Arthur would have to argue semantics.
They are assets that we plan on collecting,
tried Arthur. Boyd's face slackened with boredom, and his eyebrows relaxed. He put the binoculars back up to his face. The conversation was done, as far as he was concerned.
Assets that are as good to the agency dead as they are alive. Either state is perfectly collectible, Boyd stated. But this is war, and disregarding their safety gives us a tactical advantage.
But excuse me,
Boyd shouted. His binoculars now at his side, his eyes squinting and his teeth bare beneath his mustache.
If you have more to say, kindly set up an appointment.
The air was filled with a sonorous beat of marching, and still empty from the rage of bullets. This would change very soon. Ralph grabbed Arthur by the arm, a look of panic and fear in his eyes. Come on, he said, doing his best to usher Arthur away from any wrath he might incur. Arthur looked at Ralph, a man who had secretly been looking up to him. He knew that he had disappointed Ralph before by putting him down. He was going to have to disappoint the man even further. Arthur gently removed Ralph's hand from his arm, then clenched his own hands into fists.
No! He screamed up at Boyd. God damn it! Listen to me!
Boyd's jaw slacked in disbelief. He stayed silent, almost stunned in disbelief. There was no appealing to Boyd's humanity. He had none. There was no ethical argument he could make. He had Boyd's attention. If he wanted to change his mind, he would have to argue benefits.
You are throwing away a perfectly good resource and a legacy, sir. Those assets are more important to us alive than they are dead. This seizure of back taxes is the largest in our post-nuclear history, and it could help us grow.
Boyd's eyes were murderous. Arthur was certain that the only reason Henry S. Boyd did not kill him where he stood was because he could still have others do it for him. Get on with it, Boyd said, in a calm reserved for the most malicious of patience.
We can easily double our size in auditors, and therefore in our operations, if you capture those assets alive. Not only can the IRS expand and serve a wider area of the nation, but you, sir, will be remembered as the man who did it, as the man who saved America.
Gunshots. It did not matter who fired first. There would be nothing but that sound now, until one side was dead or had run out of bullets. Arthur's heart broke at the sound of it. If any of the slaves died, it was his doing. He had brought the army here. Boyd placed his thermos of coffee to his lips, then folded his leg over the other. You make a fair point, he said. Then he smiled as he placed the binoculars back to his face and said, Next time? My boy, set an appointment. The conversation was over. Arthur had had enough. Righteous anger, desperation, a sense of self-destruction? It did not matter which. What would Robbia do? It was a stupid question, but it was one he was happy to answer. Arthur clenched his fist tighter, squared his shoulder, and walked right up to Boyd's personal assistant. In an instant, he hammered his fist into the assistant's testicles and pulled the clipboard away from him. Now it was time to run. So run is what Arthur did.
Apprehend and discipline your subordinate, Boyd yelled,
and soon Arthur heard Ralph's footfalls behind him. Arthur took a glimpse at the clipboard he had stolen as he sprinted toward the operations tents. It was a brick-red form. Red paper stock was only used by the higher-ups. He had never seen it before.
Arthur! Ralph yelled between labored breaths. What are you doing?
He did not reply. The sound of war raged, and each bullet he heard could mean the death of an innocent he had meant to save. If Ralph was trying to stop him, as Boyd had ordered, he would give him no time. If Ralph wanted to help, well, there was no time to give him. A steel mast held an array of speakerphones up just ahead of him. Cables had been braided together from the top of the structure and down into a tent nearby. Still more tents and equipment were being carried out of vans to be set up, and more than once Arthur almost ran into a group of men and women during their labors. He quickly looked behind him. Ralph was still pursuing him. They would both be at the tent soon. He looked down once more. The form was surprisingly simple. A single table read, Orders to dictate to enforcers must be written in uppercase. Lowercase and parentheses are for specific instructions to the operator. The form was already signed by Boyd, likely done ahead of time to speed the process up. Yet enough thought for speed was not given to the distance between Boyd and the operator. This was just standard office fuckery. Arthur pulled out his pen, clicked the top, and heard Ralph gaining. His writing was messy. It was hurried, but it would have to do. Arthur wrote only two sentences. Take the slaves alive. All further orders will be in mahogany paper stock only. Refuse queries to change. It took up most of the form.
Arthur had reached the tent. In a second, he had entered it, and he handed the clipboard to the operator. Ralph entered immediately after. Ralph was a supervisor. The operator had not yet made the announcement. This could have been for nothing. But Ralph stayed silent. The operator, a tall and lanky woman, flipped a switch on the large control board, then pulled a microphone up to her mouth. "Take the slaves alive," she said, and her voice boomed like a bored god above them. "I repeat, take the slaves alive." There was the slightest pause in gunfire, only noticeable because Arthur was so aware of the noise itself. It, at the very least, suggested that if the army had fired at the slaves, there was maybe one left alive. It was the most comforting pause he had ever heard, but it did not mend his broken heart. "What the fuck just happened?" Ralph said, looking at Arthur as he tried to catch his breath from the sprint. Arthur did not respond. If his plan had worked, the operator would ignore any further order given by Boyd, as all of his current forms were still a brick red. Boyd, ignorant of the new stipulation and protocol, would likely send form after form before the situation was rectified. He just hoped that Boyd was not spiteful enough to change the order. He hoped that he would just go with it to save face. Whatever happened, Arthur would face it willingly. He had done his best. He walked past Ralph, meeting no resistance from the man, and exited the tent. Outside, he was met by two armed enforcers. One was older than the other, more grizzled and scarred, his companion young and untouched by hardship. The older one spoke, raising a rifle at Arthur. "You are to come with us for disobeying orders and ignoring protocol." These were words Arthur thought he would never hear. They were accusations he thought would never be laid on himself. Yet, here he was, a rebel and a bad employee. Hell must be buying fireplaces. It was not long before the personal assistant Arthur had assaulted arrived. He hobbled over slowly, but with the stern face of a man who was trying to do so quickly. As he approached, the older enforcer yanked the clipboard from Arthur's hand and handed it to the assistant. Arthur watched as the assistant entered the tent, and as he was led away, left Ralph behind, stunned and stupefied. He did not look back again, but saw Ralph step forward, hesitate, then stop again. He did not see the man he had assaulted scream, "What do you mean, the wrong form?" at the top of his lungs. No, Arthur saw only that which was ahead of him, a ruined career and uncertainty. Strangely, it was worth it. The guards did not seem to know what to do with him. There was no precedent for what Arthur had done, and therefore the punishment wasn't clear. The two briefly argued on whether or not they should tie him up or lock him up in the back of a van, with the younger one insistent that he knew a good knot. They settled on both. Before the slavers started chaining their slaves up as human shields, before Boyd ordered the march with no regard to the safety of innocents, the IRS had prepared to take the slaves back. Originally, they figured that the slaves would be kept safely inside the city and in their cages. A quarter of the vans they had arrived with were meant to shuttle these assets back to the bunker in waves. Arthur wondered if Boyd had actually planned on taking the slaves back in trips, or if he had only brought enough for the number of slaves he expected to survive. It was one of these vans that the enforcer had taken him to. The van was not far from the operations tents. The bottom of it was caked in white ash from the mountain. The younger enforcer fiddled with some rope for a minute, then two. When he finished, he unbound Arthur and attempted to try again before the older one interrupted him and bound Arthur in zip ties, then gave a long and disappointed look at the younger one. Arthur did not resist. With his arms and feet bound together with zip ties, they threw him inside and shut the door behind him. Arthur had a smile on his face the entire time. Arthur was once again held prisoner inside of a van near Slaver City. Deja vu was a cruel bitch. Outside, the battle raged on. Gunshots were king, occasionally subsiding just long enough so that Arthur could hear the human misery that they were causing. As the time passed, Arthur listened to his surroundings intently. Never once did he hear the loudspeaker again. Hours went by, and only when the air had begun to cool did the sounds of war subside.
The mechanics of siege warfare dictated that this endeavor could last days, which was something the IRS was probably more prepared for than the slavers. When silence fell, Arthur figured that the slavers' morale must have skyrocketed as the IRS retreated back into their nearby camp. Yet he knew that the IRS had not given up. It was probably just off time. They were off the clock now. A screeching klaxon, the same the IRS used in the bunker to denote lunch and off time, tolled, confirming Arthur's suspicion, ending the battle but not the war. Tomorrow it would act as a death knell when it rang for the next work shift to begin. The IRS would have what it wanted tomorrow, and it wanted death and taxes. Arthur was grateful when the sun began to set, for the same reasons he was grateful for when it had set the last time he was locked up in a van. The cooling of the van was a relief. Arthur mused that the slavers at least had the decency to not bind him when they had captured him. This was only entertaining to him for the slightest of seconds, before the existential dread of it set in. More hours went by, and the light outside had vanished, leaving Arthur completely in the dark. Sleep had threatened to arrest his conscious mind just before the van's side door slid open. Ralph and Richard. "Are you rescuing me?" Arthur asked, fighting through a fog of sleep. Ralph shook his head. "From who? Yourself? It's off hours and you're an employee. They can't punish you off the clock, idiot," Ralph said, hands on his hips. "I figured after I hadn't seen you for a bit that no one bothered to let you out once they were off the clock." Richard stepped inside of the van and removed a knife from his belt. In just two quick tugs on it, the zip ties came undone, and Arthur was free of his restraints. Moving was both relieving and painful. His body had cramped, and much of it was sore from being in the same position for too long. Arthur stretched his limbs, then slowly came up and out of the van, only to meet the very dissatisfied face of Ralph. "You got me in trouble too, you know," Ralph said as his cousin returned the knife to his belt. "I got an infraction because of you. That's a permanent mark on my record, asshole. Now Boyd is questioning my leadership." Richard shifted his weight and looked at Ralph with a narrow frown. "I only came, in my own personal free time, might I add, because Rich insisted." Arthur had no patience for this. A month ago, he might have sympathized. Now, he could not summon an ounce of fucks to give. "I'm not apologizing, Ralph," Arthur said as he dusted himself off. When he was satisfied that no further effort would get any cleaner, he straightened his tie and looked in Ralph's eyes. "I did the right thing."
"I agree," Richard said, avoiding his cousin's gaze.
"Well, no shit," said Ralph. "You did the right thing, but you made the wrong decision. Damn it, Arthur. Richard and I have been mucking up paperwork for years," he added. "Something I am not happy about, by the way," he said, looking squarely at Richard.
After a deep breath, he returned his agitated gaze to Arthur.
"If you had told me what you were planning on doing, we could have done it behind Boyd's back. You didn't have to make anyone infertile."
"Oh," said Arthur. "Yeah, I suppose that would have been better." Arthur shuffled his feet into the dusty ground beneath him. When no one else seemed like they were going to talk, Arthur looked up at Richard. "How men," he said, finding that he had to fight to finish it. "How many of the slaves died?"
"Not many," Richard replied. "Most of the slavers were at the top of their wall, so we concentrated fire there."
"Not many" was a good answer, but it still meant that innocents had died.
"I'm not sure what Boyd plans on doing with you," Ralph said, his tone now more calm than condescending. "He probably wants you dead," he said, laughing.
"You have no idea how true that is," Arthur said, sending the cousins into a fit of laughter. Arthur was serious. After the laughter passed, Ralph looked Arthur in the eyes.
"You saved my life today. Hell, you saved a lot of lives today."
And with a companionable hand on Arthur's shoulder, he said, "Thank you." Arthur had no idea how to reciprocate. He should have said something important then, about how no life is more important than another's, but that all life is greatly important. He should have said something about how good deeds need no witness or credit. He should have said what he felt, that Ralph was a friend, and that though the road it took to get there was a strange one, it was one that he was glad to have taken.
Instead, he cleared his throat and, in a small and awkward voice, muttered, "No problem," then clicked the top of his pen repeatedly.
About the author. M.P. Fitzgerald is an author and humorist dedicated to injecting the feverish gonzo style into fiction. You can get Memos from the Wasteland, which is the official prequel to this book, free. It contains hilariously bleak office drama, Robbie's diary, and Arthur's last letter from his father. To get your copy, just head over to his website at mpfitzgerald.art. You'll also get free updates on future audiobooks and more. We hope you have enjoyed A Happy Bureaucracy by M.P. Fitzgerald, narrated by Gary Bennett. Text copyright 2019 by M.P. Fitzgerald. Production copyright 2021 by M.P. Fitzgerald.
Music by Dustmice. Available on all streaming services and dustmice.bandcamp.com.